Attention, attention. You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. Curious Realm is busy traveling the vast void of time and space to find the best paradigm-changing content the universe has to offer. Enjoy the following transmission, and remember, stay curious. Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Realm, episode 5, coming at you from Austin, Texas. This is a pre-recorded episode before you guys start firing off questions, though I will be live monitoring the episode from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. I am time traveling right now with you guys because, well, I'm in Vegas covering CES for my original show, Talking Sound Podcast. I'm here with the Tech Podcast Network. It's going to be great. Stop on by. Check it out on the homepage, TalkingSoundShow.com, TalkingSoundPodcast.com. I am shameless. I'll tell you about all of it. I'm excited tonight to welcome back good friend of the former Dudes and Beer podcast, now friend of The Curious Realm, Jared Murphy. He is author of the book, It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us, Discovering Our Lost History. We will be talking about megalithic America, megalithic sites in America, things like Kincaid Cave, the supposed Egyptian cave that was found, reported by the Smithsonian, then lost to the ages. Does it exist? Is it there? Is it still there to this day? He has a great, great documentary that he just put out on his YouTube channel that we'll watch a clip or two of, called Terra Core, talking about that and other stuff. We'll be talking about lost knowledge of the Americas right here tonight with our good friend Jared Murphy, owner of notaliens.com, as well as co-host of Everything Imaginable. His book is actually being rewritten and re-released, so we'll be talking about that, all kinds of great stuff. While you're online checking all that out, make sure to stop on by curiousrealm.com. We have all kinds of great stuff over there. We have the new store. The store is up, live. We always wanted merch, things like that, for our previous show, but so glad to have great things now that, like, I'm running the show from a Curious Realm mouse pad. You can get a Curious Realm tie-dye or, you know, a mask, hat, all kinds of stuff. Stop on by, check it out, curiousrealm.com. That is where you can also find the Knowledge Vault for all of our declassified documents. That's where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can tune in live and check everything out. Hot take, folks, just so you know, if you subscribe to, thank you so much if you subscribe to us on any podcast service out there. However, just so you know, those front roll ads, those mid roll ads, things like that, they disappear if you go follow the RSS from the website. If you actively go and listen on the website, you don't hear those ads at the beginning and at the end. The only thing you hear is direct ad placement from our advertisers in the middle, from our actual show sponsors, not random ads from other platforms. So stop on by, check it out. That is encouragement to download the free Curious Realm app. It's fantastic. It's great. It's right there in your pocket. It's got a tip calculator. Sorry, and Apple folks, you Orchard dwellers, we are working on it. We have the source code. We just have to have it made into an Apple app. I don't know if I'm going to, because I don't think you can sideload an Apple app. And I really love the fact that all you have to do is go to this page, curiousrealm.com/app, click the image, and it says download the app and install it, like right there in front of you. So it's great. You don't even have to visit or give your data to any online system like the Google Play Store or anything like that. You can directly download our app, have access to everything right there at your fingertips, as well as a great tip calculator. Stop on by, check it out, curiousrealm.com/app. While you're online doing that, make sure to stop on by The Curious Realm on Facebook. You can follow Curious Realm Podcast. That is the page where you will get all the news and updates directly from the website. Or you can come become a member of the group, and that is where we draw our Dudes and Beer News of the Week every week. That's where we post articles, carry on conversations with like-minded individuals in the world of disclosure and lost knowledge and esoteric knowledge. One of the things we'll be talking about tonight, actually, NASA paid priests to figure out how to deal with aliens. I've been telling a lot of people, like, gee, doesn't this kind of sound a little bit like Project Bluebeam? We'll be getting into some of that, some of the lost knowledge behind things like that. Ghislaine Maxwell found guilty in her sexual trafficking charges, and that news is all over. I posted it from about 8 or 9 different sources. It is official. That has actually happened. Out of dailymail.com or .co.uk, Chinese lockdown rule breakers are shamed to encourage COVID compliance. Like, this is straight up out of Game of Thrones, folks. Like, shame, shame. It's wild. More about Ghislaine Maxwell. And then out of the AP News, new COVID-19 cases in the U.S. soar to highest levels on record. Interesting, coming on the heels of the 1-year anniversary of the COVID-19 vaccines. Out of Social from TechCrunch, True Simple completes its first driverless autonomous truck run on public roads. That is pretty huge news. Also huge news, you can stop by and support Curious Realm. Stop on by, check it out. That is CuriousRealm/support. Our guest this evening, the amazing, the great Jared Murphy, author of It's Not Aliens, It's Us, has come out with this fantastic documentary. Let's check out just a couple seconds of it here to get a little primer of what we're going to discuss tonight.
The influence of Victorian archaeologists. And although there's a lot of great conversations and a lot of light, a renaissance in archaeology and information about our ancient past, we have been so embedded because of Victorian archaeology to believe that we are the most advanced we ever were. We miss high-tech ancient human works. It's dismissed. Cranes are it. These nubs at the top of these posts are examples of engineering way beyond what it would take to build this structure. But that's how it's left. That's what we're left as a narrative, that we are as advanced as we've ever been, and that's not true. That's what we're going to be discussing. Ancient advanced engineering right down to the soil, terraforming a planet, genetics, information that is so beyond what's currently been dialogued that none of these Victorian archaeologists even had on their radar. It was outside of their belief system. They were interpreting it with a Western eye in a system that did not allow for us to be more advanced than we were today, other than loincloths. But that's not true.
Welcome back to the show. The voice you are hearing and the writer, director, creator of this amazing documentary, TerraCore, Jared Murphy. How are you doing this evening?
Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for coming back. You know, you were actually, just a little inside baseball, folks, Jared was a big part of the decision to rebrand this show. For some reason, I think just kindredly hit it off whenever you appeared on the previous incarnation of this show the first time. And
yes,
as I had you on, it was just one of those, like, this could be so much more than what it is, but it can't be that under this banner. And we had a long, long conversation one night when I was on vacation with my family in Florida. And that I remember hanging up and going, yeah, it's happening. So thank you for that. And thank you for being there and being part of that catalyst of change. One of the many cogs in the gearbox that has gotten Curious Realm going, Jared. So here's to you. Hey. Thank you, my friend.
Well, I will drink to that, and I appreciate, you know, like he said, kindred spirits. When we were able to connect offline, and the reality was, is, you know, we have very parallel, certain, I think, life experiences where it just clicked. Where I'm excited about your new show as far as the branding, because you've already been the man behind the branding, and. I just think the it's so interesting. They're like, you know, branding's got to be good. And the reality is that the show is so cool. And I'm not just saying that, folks, but
thank you.
I just get I genuinely I think anyone who is a fan of mine or is getting to know me, I have zero filter. It is too difficult to lie than it is to just
energy to devote to, like, convincing myself that it's true to continue the lie.
Right. I feel we have so much to learn. Isn't it easier to just, let's just do what we say what we're thinking. Come on. You know, the song, one thing leads to another.
That's it. Well, let's, and speaking of doing what you say you're going to do and one thing leads to another, Terra Core, this documentary that you have just come out with, the whole theme behind tonight's episode is megalithic America. We recently had Dennis Stone on. For the Solstice.
Oh, cool.
He is, of course, the owner of America's Stonehenge, a great megalithic site that is still under investigation.
I was there. I did my live lecture there last April. We did a lecture and then did a tour of America's Stonehenge on site with clients or with fans and people who chose to come out, along with Michael from Dark Hour Paranormal, who I do some co-hosting with, but he came out. I did a live lecture at the local American Legion post, and then we walked America's Stonehenge, and I love Dennis. I've been able to interview him a bunch of times, and
amazing.
We actually did a short documentary. Michael did 99% of the work, but in it, it's pretty exciting because the America Stonehenge documentary that he put out, and it was really us both there at the site, but he packed this thing up, but he actually found something that not even Dennis had noticed on America Stonehenge site. And if you go to Dark Hour Paranormal, it's on the on their YouTube page too. But what was really interesting is the site is, it spans acres. It is pretty spectacular. Like you said, there are at least evidences to show that it's over 8,000 or 9,000 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like we said with Dennis on the show, even whenever you go back to the earliest recorded run across of it, of the local population, when they found it and put it into the local record, it was like, what's this thing that we ran across? We asked the local Indians and they're like, I don't know, it's been there for years.
Like, what's really,
like, the local Indians didn't even have lore about it.
No,
you know, so it's obviously not something that they took the effort to build. Otherwise, they got a pretty good social memory, you know.
They do.
So, and it's just one of those, like, it is an utter astounding mystery to get into.
It is. And even when you're there at the site, I asked Dennis something that I thought was very curious. The indigenous in the area for years had been burning out the valley. There were no trees. For miles, because they wanted grasslands for the grazing animals that they had. So they practiced controlled burns. And they would make sure that that entire valley that you come up into that's wooded now. In fact, when we did our lecture, when I did my lecture, Dennis was completing 18 acres of tree removal because the trees were destroying the site. And as we were looking at, like you said, up on the very peak of the site, when you're looking off across to the other valley mm-hmm. side, which is almost 20 miles away, and you're looking, and I looked at Dennis and I just said, Dennis, are there corresponding megalithic mounds on the other sides of the valley? And he goes, boy, you are bright. And I'm like, I'm going to repeat that story so I could say that I'm yeah. bright. But he said, yes, there are dolmen-like America Henge, like just like out of Lord of the Rings, where they're lighting the beacons on every mountaintop that they can see.
Yep.
Apparently, a bunch of these equinoxes, solstices, these key points on that hill, they do correspond to other ruins across this valley by miles away, which would have been easy to see because there was no trees.
Yeah, same with the windows and the walls. All kinds of stuff. And that was one of the things that I posited whenever we had him on, I guess the last couple times, was the large chambers, if they were actively observation rooms, to be able to block out moonlight from horizon observations, that kind of thing, to be able to block out overhead moonlight.
You know, we were there at the height. One of the things that had happened was is Dennis had invited us out for the full moon. And we went out for the full moon. And the timing on that, it was so crazy. It had just started raining. It's dark. He gave us the entry code. We were actually at America's Stonehenge at night.
That sounds like something you would do. Like, here's the gate code. Just go on in.
Yeah, and then it's during this like super important moon equinox, whatever. I'm sure that there are Wiccan out there super upset with me right now.
Yeah.
It was a super important solar event, lunar event, and we were out there at exactly around the time that it was supposed to be the most important, and nobody else was there, but it was it was late. It was after 8 p.m. and it was crazy because it was raining. It's dark. It was kind of going on and off. And then Michael and I, you know, he's much more, paranormally sensitive. I don't know how else to put it, but from Dark Hour Paranormal. And he was able to pick up some things in those chambers that you're talking about that I wasn't picking up, that he was more, you know, genetically expressed to be sensitive to. And it was quite an interesting, surreal experience to experience the site during the lunar event, no matter what, to be there at night and alone, and then to do it during the day. And then, of course, Dennis is so generous with his time. So I had done the lecture and we had brought people out, and he spent, in between chainsawing, he spent 2 hours with our group. It was hilarious.
And, you know, this site, folks, is the point of so many hypotheses. I don't like to say theories because I think that's a bit out there. You got to have some proof to have a theory. You can hypothesize anything you want. And granted, we've had like L.A. Marzulli on the show a couple times. He is one of the big proponents of the fact that it is a former Nephilim complex over there in New Hampshire. That is what the mounds are in Minnesota. And even possibly what Kincaid Cave was in what is now the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. So many people on, you know, this whole thing, by the way, started with me and Gary from Everything Imaginable. Somebody had said something and I was in the middle of planning my South American research trip. And I'm a climber. I have a group of climbers. I'm not the best climber, but I'm a solid climber, and I'm with a group that has the skill set and has all the equipment for us to descend or ascend the what should be the Kincaid Caves, you know, from the rim. It's about 1,500 feet down based on description, or it's about 2,000 feet up from the floor. So at this point, the Grand Canyon is 3,480 feet in height. And it's in a very specific place.
Wow.
Right near the Quaggoont Rapids. And so it just got me lit because I'm like, look, there's all these people doing adventures around the world and they're just, yeah, you know, you're climbing a tall mountain. That's great. But there is the entire Northwest Territory of Canada, most of Antarctica, and quite a bit. Now, here's one for you. The Grand Canyon has 270 plus miles of caves. Of those, only 150 miles has been explored. And the professor who actually runs Carlsbad made a point to say in an interview about 2 weeks before we went out here for the week that we were there, and said that there are more caves in the Grand Canyon than Carlsbad. And idea, there's 120 miles, 18 feet wide. The canyon is, 18 miles wide. The canyon can be up to 25 miles, give or take. It's massive in width, and it's 6,000 feet deep. And there's 120 miles of unexplored charted caves. And to give you an idea of one of the caves, one of the 150 miles of caves that they have gone into was found to have over 40 miles of cave in it.
Wow.
And that's one cave out of the period of the 150 miles they have explored. So the Kincaid Cave, I'm like, look, I have a whole group. We have all the gear. I am over people talking about a cave that's supposed to have, like, Kincaid comes back. Now, Kincaid officially was actually retained to do – he actually had worked – what's very interesting is that he worked for someone who worked for the Smithsonian, but Kincaid was a photographer that had learned – to do nature photography, and the point is he possibly locates the opening. By the way, there is stained in the articles. There's two articles for him, and you have them up. And in short, the articles describe that he saw a discolored cave wall. Well, the canyon wall is layers and layers and layers of hardened sand, and the canyon is different colors everywhere. So, okay, maybe he saw a different color, and we're not talking just advanced hiking. And yes, he could have had stakes and ropes and made his way safely up there. But to ascend 2,000 feet and to do that is an accomplishment, because this wasn't just a steep hill. So he gets up there and he finds a cave, which the story goes he found over 80 mummies, that they were Oriental in appearance, that there was a Buddha, that it may have been Egyptian, but in reality, the majority of what he described was Asiatic. And let's just say it was there. He said that there was a gate and there was stairs that were near the entrance. Well, we came, Rex from Leak Project and I, and some of the I did some broadcast from on my Not Aliens YouTube channel. I did do some broadcast from the rim of the canyon right there. So we were with a Navajo guide on Navajo Nation land, exactly where the cave is supposed to be. There's no going around it. Based on the description of those two articles, this is where the cave is supposed to be. And we spent a few days, and what we did, we methodically photographed the exact point in the wall where the Kincaid Cave is described to be. It is not there. There's your big drum roll. Oop, drum roll. It's not there. Knock, knock. What's not there? G.E. Kincaid. Now, some people have pointed out, some very smart people have pointed out, like, let's say that the Kincaid Cave was there, but then they collapsed the entrance. So the one thing I will tell everyone is that for sure the Kincaid Cave is not at that point. Stone Rapids, it's a very specific point now. The wall is very big, but I can tell you we have very extensive photography of the Kincaid Cave wall. But it's not there. And so what we could do is assume that, say, the Smithsonian came, took everything out, and it really did happen. And then, we're going to get to the crashing, by the way. Do you know that the start of the FAA is because of the Grand Canyon? What's really interesting is I've learned. Okay, so I'll back up. So the biggest, craziest thing I learned about the Kincaid Cave is two things. One, there are 600 open just to go look for uranium. There are 600 open permits.
Oh, wow.
Now, of uranium, there is also open pit storage of uranium and contamination in the Colorado River. And it's quite spectacular, and I can go into that in a minute. But also, tragically, two planes ran into each other, and 128 people died between the two planes. Now, believe it or not, World War II happens. We, you know, Pan Am, Catch Me If You Can, Leonardo DiCaprio movie. Air traffic is very innocent. They just assume that it's a really big sky and no one would run into each other. So once upon a time, it's 1956. They're both flying at 20,000 feet. And these two flights, it was a TWA flight, I think, run into each other. And so they end up having, of course, they do their best to recover all the bodies, but the wreckage did not get a full cleanup until the 70s. And that means that there are mysterious looking crane platforms. There is remnants of prior, not only of where they did the cleanup of the wreckage, because it landed all over sort of around this area. And then there was also other tourist locations, canyon. All of it was there for people to visit the canyon in ways that we've forgotten about already. And it means that there are a lot of aspects to the canyon that are very mysterious that lent to people thinking that, oh, well, this is a crane platform for the Kincaid Cave. And to finish one thought before I tell you about the amount of uranium in the canyon, is that of the Kincaid, so the Kincaid may have been collapsed, and we would need a thermal imaging, something at night to get the temperature differential of where there would be an opening to a cave.
Yeah.
So that is something that we're considering, is going back with thermal imaging. So that's the only part about this for those listening that might be off, is that we obviously can't see what may have been collapsed, but we will catch the temperature differential, hopefully. And now, excuse me, as we are looking for the cave, I'm telling you, I did a lot of prep before we did this trip. And this whole trip, by the way, this expedition, and by the way, it is an hour and a half of hard four-wheel drive driving. When for you to go out to this point in the canyon, you need an all-wheel drive vehicle. You need some experience driving an all, you know, actual off-road. This is intermediate to advanced off-roading. You're an hour and a half from a gas station at 40 miles an hour. And that's a scene from my documentary. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we're doing all this research on it. Those are all nanostructures, by the way, in that picture that you're looking at. Those are actual nano man-made machines. But we start looking into it, and there is – it seems kind of silly, but, of course, Antelope Canyon, where everyone likes to go. And then Horseshoe Canyon, you know, where people like to go get that graphic, beautiful photography of the Grand Canyon, the Horseshoe Bend. Right. And then, of course, Antelope Canyon, where everyone gets those beautiful photographs of the very the water carved where Peter Lick, you know, did the photography of the dust in the wind in the canyon and the Antelope Canyon, where all it's curvy and everything. And there's a lake that is some of the it's dammed, and One of the large water reservoirs. There's Antelope Canyon right there. And then of course, you know, Peter Lick did that famous, there's Horseshoe Bend on your lower left. So the lake that is not very far from Horseshoe Bend, which is just right out of town. Well, they have now mind you, it's the government, right? They had started uranium mining, and I'm all for the United States government having as much uranium as they need for, at the time, you know, mostly nuclear. However, this lake supplies the water for drinking. It's recreational. People manage in the lake near Horseshoe Bend. And I can't believe it, but I'm do me a favor. I'm blanking on the name of the lake. I can't believe it. How's that for live action? Jared's thinking out loud. I was there. It's hilarious. Near.
Now, granted, Horseshoe. The article I have up is talking about stuff in Arizona. But this is talking about three large buckets of uranium ore that sat in a museum building in the south rim of the Grand Canyon National Park. Where quite literally people came and took tours around these buckets of uranium ore, man.
Like, yeah, so it's
that's horrifying.
It's Horseshoe Bend is in Page, Arizona. And I don't know why I couldn't think of Lake Powell, but it's Lake Powell. So of the buckets of uranium, right, which sounds asinine, right? So picture this. You need to do thousands of tons of ore to just get a pound of uranium.
Yeah.
So here's Lake Powell. It's a lot like, for those of you who go to the Hoover Dam, which is so low, it's just bananas right now.
Oh, but yeah.
So Lake Powell's in Page, where Antelope Canyon is and Horseshoe Bend is. And it's a beautiful little town. It's really fun. And Lake Powell, which is a dammed up water reservoir. Well, here's the reason they made Lake Powell. They're digging up uranium and they're like, where are we going to store it all? Do you want to guess where I'm going?
Yeah.
The fun part's going to be for everyone listening, because really this is worth the buildup. How much uranium mining? Okay, so when you mine something, for those of you who aren't a Gold Rush fan, because Gold Rush is kind of fun, dig it up by the. Yeah, so you have mining tailings, which are the crushed up remnants of the rock they crush to get the gold, or to get, when you're crushing up an ore, the remnants of what you don't want are called tailings. So they can be, basically it's a pile of class 5 gravel, sometimes smaller, sometimes bigger, but it's the tailings. And they have to stick it somewhere. They have to stick the piles of the unwanted rock and debris. So officially, there are 36,000 tons of uranium tailings at the bottom of Lake Powell, because they thought if they stuck it down there and stuck some dirt over it and stick it in water, it would keep it encased.
Wow.
This is coming from the Kincaid trip. I learned a lot more. We're going to also talk about dinosaurs, but 36,000 tons of radioactive material is in the drinking water recreational lake, which winds its way down the Colorado, which doesn't even include a very large uranium mine, which was over the border in Utah on the Colorado that has, and by the way, there's multiple ones, but they actually have a uranium tailing, you're going to love the explanation on mining. The government, there was a settlement for a couple of the indigenous tribes that have been breathing radioactive dust. And the settlement in 2008 was over $500 million, and they still haven't been paid a dollar.
Wow.
And there's a lot to be said. I did not know I was going to turn into a semi raise the alarm, but the uranium laced groundwater is because, so for instance, what I was about to say is there's a mine, an old mine, and the tailing pond is a few hundred feet from the river, which when I say tailing pond, think of just a giant used open pit quarry sort of thing. And they, and then they just filled it with water. And okay, so you have radioactive. Well,
and a quote from the Center for Biological Diversity, quote, "The big question now is whether contaminated water has moved from the mine into deep aquifers that feed Grand Canyon Springs," said Grand Canyon Trust Program Director Roger Clark. Quote, "Once polluted, remediation of the aquifers would be impossible. If agencies cannot insure against that pollution, which they can't, the mining should not occur." This was from a press release from the Center for Biological Diversity from August 4th, 2014.
Yes.
From the Sierra Club.
You
couldn't find somebody honestly more care. And if I'm not mistaken, was it not the Sierra Club that was partial sponsor of the original trip that supposedly found the underground city?
Oh, I don't know. I've never heard that.
They did a lot of that stuff back in the day. Like the whole national park system is pretty much because of the Sierra Club and people.
Well,
like that.
So Ansel Adams, the reality was, is that Kincaid as a photographer wasn't, I don't think, officially retained by the Smithsonian, but he was a photographer and he was supposed to be photographing the canyon. That was part of his job. So I wonder if he was actually under a different retainer and it was really the Sierra Club. I would be interested. That now we're really digging into the details. I was shocked. There are so many mining tailings across Arizona that, again, we need a mining industry. We need to secure, we need to be able to do this. But I think rather than saying you guys were idiots for not taking care of it, I think for all the times they take money when they think we don't want to pay for it, I don't think anyone wanted to wait 2 years. By the way, so it's weird. If you talk about the Grand Canyon and you say, I want to go, it's real easy. You go to Vegas, you take your car ride or maybe you're in Arizona, but it's easy to go to the South Rim and go to the Skywalk and stop at that indigenous center and go stand on the rim and, go to Guano Point where there was a mine that actually had a cable that went across to another cave that they mined for over a decade from Bat Guano. And that's at the same place that the Skywalk is. Well, you can go there as a tourist, no problem. However, I cannot believe how hard it is to get on the internet. I spend hours trying to understand, like, how do you get on the river? How do you get on a canoe? Who are these people kayaking? Like, how to do it? And I got to be honest with everyone. I'm sure there's a crowd out there that are like full-time hikers and they're into hiking. Like I'm into climbing, and maybe I would have known if I was a, in quotes, real hiker or something.
Sure.
If you're an average, like if you're even just a semi bucket list interested in, hey, I want to get down the Grand Canyon River. I want to get on one of those little kayaks around the Horseshoe Bend. It's really hard to do unless you're there. And suddenly there's all these signs that say outfitter, we'll put you 5 hours on the river for honestly pretty cheap, $200-$300. Like finding people who do it. When you do, I can tell you there are multiple outfitters. You generally only have to be booked out 2 days to seven, and you can get in a kayak at near Page. And you launch from the river and you get to go around Horseshoe Bend, and then they zoom on down with motorboats. They pick you up and you sit in a boat and you go back through Horseshoe Bend. And that's not a bad deal for a couple $100.
Yeah.
But good luck trying to figure it out if you haven't done it or been there. It's really frustrating.
Well, and what was it like for you to have your Navajo guide with you? Did they provide any kind of insight or lore to the area that you guys were exploring?
Yes. So for people listening, we stayed primarily in Tuba City, which is on Navajo Nation. It is not a big town. It is about, it has three very, well, it has at least three very nice hotels. And ironically, it has like four of the biggest fast food places you could think of, but it has a really cool little local espresso shop. It has a Starbucks in their grocery store, but this town is literally about a mile long on the main street.
With two and Kentucky six, Fried Chickens?
It has at least one. And it has a Taco Bell. It has a McDonald's. It has a Subway, I think. It has a really, okay, I happen to like pizza. I don't care that it was the only thing in Tuba. One of the only, they had a pizza place that was really, really, really good. And it was in, and there's only one mall in Tuba, so you guys won't miss it. It's by the grocery. And the independent espresso shop they have in town, here's what's really cool. It's right by the Navajo Wind Talkers Museum.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, that wasn't open. And for those that don't know, I'm a huge World War II fan. My grandfather was a tank commander that landed at D-Day in a tank and was in a tank through Belgium, Holland, France for a battle of the Bulge and all the way to Berlin in a tank.
Wow.
And I'm a huge history fan of that era. And that kind of actually what, for those that didn't need to know, that's what, from the minute I could pick up a book, I started with picture books when I was really young, but from the minute I could go to the library and learn about history, I was into dinosaurs right away. Like, I don't know if it's like genetically built for boys, but or just young kids in general. I was researching about this from the beginning. And so the Wind Talker Museum was closed, unfortunately, and I really, really, really wanted to go in that because it was right there at Tuba. And they have a field that was one of the inspirations for and one of the reference points for Jurassic Park. And it is a bog that, of course, has hardened after millions of years. And this bog has footprints. It's insane. It has so many different kinds of dinosaurs' footprints and dino poo, rocks and rocks of dino poo. Wow. Everywhere. And here's picture this, guys. A pterodactyl comes flying out of the sky, and when they land, you know, they don't nail it on one, like they don't stop, they hop. And I got taken by my guide to where the pterodactyl landed, hopped three times, and then you could tell where it started walking. There's that much detail.
Wow.
In Tuba. And this site, folks, is free. You just have to go. You just have to go. They have, the locals have booths set up, and they have some of the most beautiful locally sourced stones, generally locally sourced stones. So like stuff from the Grand Canyon itself. Nice. But it's all handmade native art, and it's stunning. All of it's stunning. And there's something, and even if you're not, like, if you're thinking it's going to be just very like wild and eccentric, it's not there. And it, despite when you think of it being like, oh, it's going to be Southwestern art, some of it, and I do design build, I got to tell you, some of it's very contemporary, and the range, and you get to tip. So here's the etiquette: tip your tour guide. And they take you out, and as long as you want to stand, and I got lucky. It was freak weather in Arizona. Most people know it's over 100. It's incredibly hot. While we were in the field, Rex and Shondell, our guide, and I enjoyed the perfect, most beautiful 84-ish degree days while we were at the rim of the canyon. But Tuba City, right out of town, past that cool pizza place, is the dinosaur tracks. And when I say track, there was a track there that was from one of the biggest, not a brontosaurus. I apologize. It's bigger than a brontosaurus. And they said it shook the earth when it walked. And there are also footprints there from that spitting dinosaur from Jurassic Park.
Mm.
There are tracks from, oh, there are potentially, I asked to see them, but there are three footprints that look like human heel, half human footprints. And wow. Yep. So that should be my standout part of the conversation, or Yes. So this is some of it. And now if you look on your left there, those are bones. There are bones on site. There are whole bone sets still at this site. And folks, I'm not under exaggerating. This field, as far as, okay, so if you pause right where you are now, that one that you're circling on, that's kind of like they built. By the way, they use dino poo. A lot of the rocks that are around the dinosaur bones that you're looking at in that picture are actually pieces of old dino poo. Mm-hmm. And then, but what else I wanted to point out, as far as you can see in that photo, it's tracks. They're every square inch. They're tracks on top of tracks. You get to walk right on them, in them. That big one you're looking at in the middle is one of the ones that shook the earth. And they had a tremendous amount of amazing, well, it's there, like there, that picture on the right, below the one with the guy with the hand there, the next photo, that kind of starts to give you an idea how many tracks. And it's incredible. And there's a whole, so it goes on for acres and acres and acres. And as I'm there, and I'm looking around now in the distance. So yeah, you roll up, you can see almost one of the there. Now the etiquette is they take turns deciding who's going to guide you out into the field. And what they're doing, you know, when you ask how far you're interested in going, I had Elvin Yazzie, and he is Navajo and has lived in this valley for 17 generations. And Elvin does also private tours. So here's something else I would tell you that's off the beaten path. And if you weren't listening to this show and us talking, I don't know how you would know about this, but Elvin is a private guide. And if you want to go up into the hills, he's been there for 17 generations, wow. Navajo. And there are hilltop abandoned Anasazi ruins and bones. Anasazi, way before the Navajo, there were Anasazi. And one of the things I asked Elvin was, I explained my book that we're looking for ancient megalithic ruins. And I think one of the most underlooked areas in our entire country is America, or in the world is our country, America. Yeah. That the dolmens in Montana, the Singing Rock Mountains, there's more than two. And that there is just this solid indicator that there must be larger pre-Clovis advanced abandoned ruins. So I asked him, I said, are there anything rocked cut? Is there anything that looks like it was from another era that doesn't match Navajo or Anasazi? And he goes, yes. And they're up in the mountains. And he goes, based on your description, I know what kind of ruins you're looking for. And I asked Elvin, what do you do? And one of the things I'll be releasing is Elvin talking about all of this, his encounters with UFOs. Ironically, how's this one for you UFO people out there? That field of dinosaur footprints is and has been by his. By the way, I did not explain anything to do with I'm an ancient history. I'm an ancient truth seeker as far as like a field researcher. I'm not looking for UFOs. Yeah. I said nothing about UFOs. I hadn't even given him the title of my book yet, I don't think. He volunteered that there is a tremendous amount of UFO activity over this dinosaur field.
Wow.
And he's encountered on the ground a cigar-shaped UFO and a saucer over the last Elvin is a young man, and I will not out him for being an experienced man, likely in his 60s. But he, over the course of 40 years, has had two encounters. One was he saw the cigar-shaped UFO from a distance, and I got video of him talking about actually being able to walk right up to one of the saucer-shaped UFOs.
Wow.
So that activity is, I guess, frequent in that area. The Anasazi ruins are real, and they're in the bluffs surrounding this field. And so that, along with the uranium tailings and a missing Kincaid cave, led us down to looking at some other areas for caves. And the point is we were trying to find a location where I have to show up with a group of climbers with 1,000 pounds of gear. Yeah. And it's not a one-day climb. This is a set set the climb over the course of a couple days. And it's not a make a cool, hard route. It was how do we make a safe descent 2,000 or 1,500 feet to just get down and photograph an interesting cave, right? Well, we never found it. And that initial trip will now lead us into a new trip where we go for the thermal imaging. And we definitely, like I said, release some things on the Leak Project. But as far, right, it's nearly inaccessible. So if you don't believe me, don't go looking for it, because
this
it'll
is
be hard
this
fun.
Is from Kincaid's report itself. I would impress that the cavern is nearly inaccessible. The entrance is 1486 feet down the sheer canyon wall. It is located on government land and no visitor will be allowed there under penalty of trespass. The scientists wish to work unmolested without fear of archaeological discoveries or being disturbed by curio or relic hunters.
Yeah, there is no cave there. You know, that's the thing about when you go out with actual. And here's the thing. Good luck trying to find anything without the local indigenous support and help.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have that support and help, we wouldn't have been there. And the reality is that it's not there. So where is it, if at all? And this is in a period where to paint everyone a picture, you know, Machu Picchu has not been rediscovered yet.
Yeah.
Colonel Percy Fawcett has not lost his butt again in the Brazilian Amazon. You know, that's still pending. You know, in 1907, you know, you're dealing in an era of this heightened frenzy of archaeology in Europe, in Egypt, you know, in the rediscovering and really, really, really going after the pyramids. Flinders Petrie is, I don't know if he's even alive by 1907. Flinders Petrie has done much of his work in the, you know, there's work in Egypt in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s that are really, really, really garnering a tremendous amount of excitement. And again, National Geographic is all over doing some pretty cool work. And by 1907, 08, if you wanted to make a name for yourself, I think there's a lot of reasons this guy, if he existed, would want to say what he's saying,
yeah,
you know, to become famous. So I am leaning on telling you that we don't have any other info than these two articles. And a lot of people have a lot of opinions on it, but I just got it in me. It's like, okay, we need to climb. We need the gear, and we just need to know where the damn cave is. And
it's interesting because we actively have more evidence about giants in America than we do about this.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The cave, so one of the pushbacks would be, well, oh, it's not where you think it is. And it's like, look, he describes the Quaggunt Rapids. There's only one place that the rapids exist. I mean, well, they're the rapids, you know, he names these rapids and the mile marker where this is, it's the same. This is the location. And we didn't look in just like, you know, a few hundred feet. We photographed for miles, within 8 miles to 10 miles. We photographed beyond, over, and past where this cave is supposed to be. And we photographed exactly where the cave would have been, looking up and down the entire length of 8-ish windy miles of the river. So we didn't just go to the one point, but we went beyond the rapids. We went to the rapids. We went past the rapids. And there is no... And here's the other thing. He says from the river itself, you can't see the entrance, but he had a hunch. Follow that one, folks. He had a hunch and he made an effort to go up 2,000 feet to get to this cave, allegedly. But, oh, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think this is a great point for us to take a break, because when we come back, What I want to do is take this story into the modern age and marry it with the concept of lost technology, things that we have known for thousands of years as a humanity and just kind of forgotten. And kind of marry that with the article that we were talking about at the beginning of the show that we posted about NASA bringing in Catholic priests to advise on how to introduce the topic of aliens and alien life to the public. So I think about that while we're taking this break real quick. And when we get back, we'll get into that and so much more, folks, with our good guest, Jared Murphy, author of It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us, Discovering Our Lost History. That and more at notaliens.com. We'll get into it right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. All right. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors for everything that you do for us. It is because of y'all that we get to have the great social media campaigns that we have, that we get to go out and do all the great stuff that we get to do, our website, our app, everything else could not happen without our sponsors. And without your support, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/support today. You can buy a cup of coffee. You could buy a cup of coffee every day for a month, or one day a month if you wanted to. Numerous options right there. Stop on, check it out. CuriousRealm.com/support. The website of our guest this evening is NotAliens.com, and our guest is Jared Murphy. Jared Murphy, welcome back. The conversation pivot point right now is lost knowledge. The concept of, we spent the first part of the show talking about this new documentary that you put out, TerraCore, which is I've watched the first few minutes of at the beginning of the show. It's interesting, like you were saying, to start going into nanotechnology used by ancient civilizations, and high technology of construction used by ancient civilizations that we aren't even using today.
Yep.
Now, to kind of bring that into light and into focus for this last part of the episode, let's kind of switch gears a little bit into how this lost knowledge is brought back to light. Was it completely lost knowledge? Was it knowledge that has just been kind of lost to the greater, greater mindset of humanity? Or how do we go about rediscovering this, and how do we go about taking knowledge that has been hidden and starting to reveal it?
It's so interesting because it's been years of, we've really accelerated. I mean, we literally have grandparents and relatives that are alive when there was just a horse and buggy.
Yeah.
And those people can remember a time without even a train.
Yep.
I mean, we really can go back another 100 years from their time, from when they were kids, to the invention of the steam engine and almost the Industrial Revolution. So, well, basically the Industrial Revolution. So for us, I think we're limited in what we're thinking at 10 to 15% capacity of brain power, where I've described that we're on a planet that's really in safe mode. And I say that because the level of technology that, as you said it, we haven't re-reached the ability to do what you're seeing with not just polygonal construction, but our own genetics. We're seeing a connection in the engineered soils. The ancient engineered planet had soils like Terra Preta, not TerraCore, my documentary, but Terra Preta is a type of engineered soil that's not only found in Brazil, it's found in Northern, South America, Central America. Terra Preta is found in the savannas of South Africa. It's found in North Africa. It's found across the world. Now, Terra Preta should not be in just one, you know, it shouldn't be the identical system. And what's more important is that they haven't figured out how to copy it. And that's what sent me on a 3.5 year search on my book, which was, you have a missing ancient advanced society that was creating a soil that could filter for all of those wondering about a global warming. This is a society that was managing soils, I think, to do that, to manage carbon dioxide, heavy metals. It wasn't just for growing. It's the most rich growing soil on Earth. It self-replicates. It has piezoelectric properties, which leads us to these giant polygonal walls, which has, again, the ability to connect and send and receive frequencies and signals. And then the people were designed that way. And then we think of large bacterial and fungal networks, which for a long time we thought that Pando, the living tree system, which is dying and was over 80,000 aspens. It was a single, it's a single living entity. And a lot of what we chalked up to biology, evolution, just a natural, in quotes, random event. I think reality is that there is a advanced ancient human society that was global, that terraformed the planet, that created biotechnology, just like their polygonal construction. They weren't just advanced in laser cutting rocks to travel 1,000 miles to build complex walls to manage earthquakes exactly in that building from hundreds of miles under the ground. They were using the machines that could measure those frequencies and energies. There's indications of the math for that in eigenvalues and the form of pi in these large energy frequency multi-use machines like the pyramids. So without getting into all of that, part of it is, how do we not see it? How do we not see the ancient 747 jumbo jet? Yeah. And then on top of it, we have thousands of years, the last 6,000 years, we think that's old. And we have all these various religions and belief systems. And because we were once genetically plugged in, and this will bring us to our aliens, this is a planet that right now is experiencing. You and I could go buy a gene CRISPR and we can start making custom babies right now if we want. But this is a society that had taken engineered soils that we literally don't know how to make to this day. The modern version's biochars, we've talked about it on the show. But for those of everyone listening, to talk about how do we get to aliens? Well, what we have is an ancient society, and what I try to tackle in the book, which is why there's going to be sequels and revisions coming, and I am working on another documentary that's going to follow up and piggyback on this one that's on Not Aliens on YouTube, Not Aliens, but the TerraCore documentary, is that we were genetically customizing ourselves to plug in with the earth and the machine that we were making, that we think of as a random amount of nature that just happened over time. I think we're devolving. You know, we weren't 10 to 15% conscious, 12,000, 20,000, 100,000, or, you know, pre-Mount Toba, 75,000 years ago. I think we were 80, 90, or 100% conscious, and we were plugged into a system which included full planetary terraforming, to the point where this entire system did work together at one point. But the biogenetic technology, so I've talked in the past about superhuman abilities like Wim Hof, Stieg Severinsen, the abilities to consciously control your immune system, your eating, your cooling, your second sight, remote viewing, things that we chalk up to various things. I think that this society was fully aware, just like all the other frequency energy technology, rock cutting, rock moving. It wasn't about rocks. It was about a full building material, completely scienced out ancient human society that, if you are going to run around, let's just ask this question for everyone who's familiar with some Air Force technology and the F-22s, and they're so advanced that the weapon systems and some of the systems are direct mind control with the pilots. Yep. Well, let's say you as a human race have all this ancient advanced technology, and you're using what you think are, again, natural systems to create a large bio motherboard. That, how hard would it for you to do 0-point turns in a Mach 25 0-point turn cigar-shaped UFO? How hard would it be for you to move around in space if you weren't maybe more bigger onboard infrared eye control? There's a whole, I'm a fan of some TED Talks. They're amazing. One is with a neurologist professor. I should get you that one. She does 29 minutes about the human skin can actually see, interpret, understand infrared waves and energy from the sun. Your skin can actually process information. And just like military pilots can control jets, if you had an anti-gravity saucer that turns at the speed that your skin, that your eyes can tell it, would you look like a human today? Would you modify your bod, and would you appear alien? And the first words out of our tripped up natural history museum, rock banging display diorama brains can get our heads around is, well, like, yeah, they evolved into that. No. They designed their machines and they designed their bodies, and we're talking humans. It's not about descendants. It's not about evolution. It's about literally choosing to engineer a body and mind that matched with your equipment.
Yeah. And I've got an article highlighted here that we covered in 2018 when it came out from futurism.com. As of today, signals from the brain can be used to command and control not just one aircraft, but three simultaneous types of aircraft. Justin Sanchez, director of DARPA's Biological Technologies Office, said, according to Defense One. And Defense One is like, that's like Jane's Defense Weekly. That's like the weekly white paper for the defense world. Like, if you're an arms dealer, that's what you're reading, you know.
like, what are we selling next week in Iraq?
That was 2018 that they were talking about a pilot being able to control not one, but three independent aircraft with their mind.
And that's why when we say, when this article comes out and says, NASA's hiring priests, there's two things. One is, and I think this is true, and it's really depressing, but hey, we're sorry. We don't want to have the discussion with all of you that a bunch of our made it underground into very large safe zones, but a lot of you didn't make it after the Mount Toba explosion, or we didn't let you in. And based on genetics, the Neanderthal, the Denisovan, the humans, at a minimum, just after Mount Toba, at least over 50,000 years ago, that the survivors on the planet, they bred together, they survived together. But it doesn't mean that it's a different race or reptilians or anything else. What it means is that a group of humans did not include another group of humans, and they were on their own, and a bunch of us on the planet survived. So what's our ancient advanced relatives supposed to do? Are they supposed to show up and say, hey, we're really sorry about not letting you guys in the bunker 80,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago? And then they get out and they're still doing them. And that includes very advanced machines and flying machines and continuing to play with their genetics. And it's not because of evolution. These are perfectly normal humans they may not look human, or they may appear in quotes godlike, or they may appear like evil looking, or however you want to put a label on it in the last 6,000 years, but they're just very advanced humans that survived an ancient cataclysm that was once a global society. And what does that mean then to a belief system? I grew up Irish Catholic, grew up very Catholic. So we're
former Catholic seminarian right here.
So here we go. So we know perfectly well there's no life anywhere, Mr. Seminor, other than Earth, right? God didn't make life anywhere but Earth.
Well, and that's just it. And that is one reason why I think that NASA has specifically brought in these theologians from the Catholic Church and this is the Times of India article that I've got up on screen right now, folks, coming out of Jakarta. But I think the whole reason is many years ago, I mean, number one, the Vatican has had a Vatican observatory at Castel Gandolfo since the 40s, 50s in Italy, in the dormant volcano. On top is the Pope's summer palace, Castel Gandolfo, which is where the Vatican Observatory is. And not many people are aware of the fact that the Vatican really kind of muscled its way past a whole lot of paperwork to get a mountaintop in Arizona.
Oh, Lucifer?
Yeah. Yeah. Like they got this whole mountaintop for astronomic observation. And years ago, the official astronomer for the Vatican came out, and the Vatican has had numerous not like papal decrees or anything like that, but numerous announcements that should it be found that there is life outside of Earth, it does not conflict with Catholic doctrine. It does not conflict with the sacrifice of Christ. It does not conflict with anything that the church teaches as far as the salvation and the salvific act of Christ. That's a huge announcement for the Catholic Church to make. Like, huge announcement that missed a lot of people's radars and really should have made a lot of people perk up. Now, a long time ago, and this was way back in the Dudes and Beer days when we first started having people like you on, first started having people like Dr. John Hall. The person will remain nameless because in the community is pretty high up. Like, there are a couple of stations out there that would not exist putting out this kind of information if this gentleman hadn't started them. And when I invited him onto the show, he saw Dr. John Hall's episodes and things like that. And he was like, listen, I enjoy the content you're putting out. It's really great. I just do not do public appearances anymore. There are way too many scientists I know that worked for NASA that have died of mysterious circumstances. And there are way too many people in the UFO community that have died of mysterious circumstances over the last many years. I just care too much about my family. I don't appear on shows. I don't speak publicly anymore, anything like that. It was like, wow. And then he was like, if you'd like to know why, we can take this off of, and the social media platform is to be nameless right now, so that people don't try to track him down. But literally, we started going back and forth in messages, Jared, and he was like, a long time ago, and he basically started laying out Project Bluebeam. And for those of you that are not familiar, the Project Bluebeam, you will not find any official PDF or anything like that. There is no official leaked document about Project Bluebeam. This is just a theory that has been floating around in the community for decades, that the government or interested parties will fake a UFO invasion after soft disclosure and set this up as a means of control over those of religious mindset. And like, it's out there, but it's one of those, like, you know, talking about number one, a religion that I'm Catholic. I'm not going to, hey man, we're right after we're in the middle of the Christmas season, technically. till the 10th, folks, till Epiphany. Then you can take down the decorations.
Skeet, skeet.
Please, God, take them down. But even even Yule and Saturnalia, like, that's what we did, man, was like, hey, yeah, you got a celebration in December, so do we. So do we. Check it out. This is what we do. Oh, that's what you do? Oh, so easy to convert. Come on over.
So, have you not heard Nat King Cole or Burl Ives or Bing Crosby?
Yeah.
You have to.
and that's just it, you know. That means of disseminating information, disseminating a hard message to the masses, they're pretty decent at. They're pretty good at it. And when it comes to not only possibly, because the one thing we've held on this show the whole time since all of this kerfuffle started with Lou Elizondo was that be careful, man. What you're seeing is what's called soft disclosure. The only way that the next technological leap will be able to happen will be for this technology to be out in the public. And the only way for that to happen is for them to admit that they found some stuff decades ago.
Yeah, that's the thing, decades ago. I know.
And that's a hard pill to swallow. That's a hard pill even for a lot of people to swallow. That there was something, we found it, we reversed engineered it, and that's where we got this technology from.
Well, the worst is that if there are humans, whether they're more advanced or not, if there are great, 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 whatever grandfathers, and the idea to think that they thought we were too devolved or we are too devolved for them to share, like, yeah, we could have cured cancer years ago for you, or we could have ended this blight, or we tried, but, you know, Bill gave you religion. Look what happened.
Yeah,
we're sorry.
Yeah, the doors that it opens, the Pandora's box of knowledge that it opens, Jared, is massive. Massive.
And you and I have talked about this, but if this society, again, if you just look at the facts on the ground, so the large buildings, the antiquity of man, like the Klerksdorf spheres going back 2.5-3 billion years. If you look at all the things that indicate that a human society was here in an advanced state, what we also then have to jump to is they've already left the planet, that they already had satellites, that they already had space traveling activity. So if those people had left, or worse, what if we did start on Mars? What if we started on Mars and then moved here? Or vice versa, obviously Mars is no longer in living condition, and obviously Earth is, but what are we going to find when it comes to archaeology? If you could throw any TV show, I'm a sucker for space archaeology, you know, anything, you can combine archaeology and space archaeology and the idea of advanced, you know, like altered carbon stuff. I would think that there's going to be a point very quickly. Well, they've already... They're literally, it's like a Shaggy song. They're standing in front of the most advanced crap on the planet going, it wasn't me. And it's like, no, seriously, that was you. I caught you red-handed. Yeah. No, it wasn't me. I mean, it's like, no, there's not advanced humans. Or they're aliens. It's easier. So that we have two fronts. One is we're not admitting that very ancient advanced humans made it on this planet. And two, we're not very far now from having to say, and I think here's what's annoying to me. They are more quickly going to say, well, there's bacteria alive on Mars. There's bacteria, which they've already said it.
Yeah.
And that hasn't made anyone nervous.
We just found a water reservoir the size of the Grand Canyon.
Yep.
Under the surface of Mars. Confirmed. And so, water on Mars.
Right. And that was supposed to be the big nerve tick for everyone for these. Now, I can think of a few Christians off the top of my head, just in this world, that I mean, like in the world of Christianity, I can think of some individuals that will not accept life outside of Earth, like just any life. They're really. I mean, I mean, there's plenty of guests I know, like Jim Willis. There's plenty of people that we both talk to that. I mean, they're living in the hardcore Bible Belt, and they're not going to accept that the Earth is 10,000 years old, right, or less.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely not life on Mars. And what are you going to do with that? You know, if you're
they're not lying. There is not life on Mars. Was there life on Mars? Quite possibly.
should we not? Should we not bring up the trilobites or whatever they are?
Oh, yeah.
Those things are so cute.
Yeah, the intergalactic roaches.
Yeah, and they're everywhere.
Everywhere.
I mean, they live without oxygen. They live in space. They're just There's no way. And again, we're non. Oh, by the way, we
you
just
mean tardigrade?
Confirmed.
Tardigrade.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. But what are those non-carbon-based life forms that we just discovered in the bottom of a couple of those sinkhole cave things in the water?
Yeah.
So we have non-carbon-based life that we have now discovered on Earth. So problematic.
Yeah.
Non-carbon-based life is a problem if it lives outside of the planet. And so I do expect – so I personally have a lot of – I'm excited like everyone, but I am not going to spend the hours that some people are spending my photos on Mars.
Yeah.
Mind you, we're not getting raw – if there was remotely two aliens punking us, they have all like scrubbed the feed. You know, we're not seeing what NASA's seen. And I just love it when people are like, we got the raw feed. We didn't get the raw feed. It got scrubbed 8 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was somebody in the group not too long ago because I posted a VR image from the new rover. That was a 360 degree panning image of the sky at night. And they're like, oh, that's all fake and computer generated. I'm like, well, no, like here's a literally here is a $229 VR 360 degree cam made by Samsung. Like, do you think they don't have one of those on the I don't see a boom arm on the where's the arm that's holding the camera? There is no arm. It's 360 degrees. It's directly under the camera.
That's
the level of technology that we have. And is it a live feed? No, it's not a live feed. Whatever's happening, like they send up directions and then come back like 15 hours later. And they're like, okay, let's tune in and watch the results.
Right. And that's it.
And there's been numerous times where they send wrong directions or bad directions and like the rover shuts down or the rover goes to the utter wrong place or just sends back error codes 15 hours later, you know?
I mean, yeah, they're dealing with and we're all old enough to deal with a 14-4 modem.
And here you are like complaining about Zoom lag, people.
Wait till you deal with it. If any of them, I wish we could set up a the experience of a 14-4 modem for people.
Yeah.
That not a 28, not 56K, a 14-4, and you have no idea what slow means.
Yeah.
You don't.
there but, is no cooling response to
no,
to
no.
explain
you don't
how long it takes.
There's no overheating your computer. You're going to be fine.
Well, and, you know, with all this in mind, like I said, to me, the whole reason that NASA has brought these religious experts aboard is because when you're dealing with something on the level of paradigm changing, paradigm shifting, you got to ask people that are used to shifting people's paradigms.
Well, you know, herein lies a great TV show. You've found human skeletons remains, a fully advanced ancient human, advanced ancient abandoned base or war-torn, destroyed epic cities across Mars. And let's just say that the military isn't. I always thought that they were 50, 60 years in advance, and the numbers I'm hearing now are 150 years advanced.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that that's true, and they've actually been working on excavating and or working on remnant abandoned satellites. So, like, just take moons, Phoebus or you know, like, or the moon itself. You know, we think it's hollow. Maybe they've already started sorting things out on the moon. You know, Asimov said it. I think the first person I have heard since Asimov interviewed about this 40 years ago, he's like, no significant space travel for humanity will happen until we get a significant, not
presence.
A little, a significant presence on the moon.
Yep.
And we really need to be on the moon. We need to be. We need to have a decent sized city with thousands of people. We need to be on the moon. And the that, and I don't follow him too closely, but I am very impressed, is Elon Musk. He said, we need to get a base on the moon. And I'm like, someone, anyone finally with the means and the actual, like, he's making the effort. It's, yes, we need to be on the moon. And, yeah, and what are we going to dig up? I mean, if well, there's...
Because you... And like, good Lord, I did a report on... the possibility of a Mars mission when I was at, God, what was it, like 1989? I was in like ninth grade. It was my freshman, my sophomore year of high school, or my fall semester of my freshman year of high school. And literally, even then, NASA was saying in order to ever reach Mars, we would have to have a presence on the moon, and not just like a presence, like a base where you can stop, refuel. You spend 3/4 of your fuel exiting Earth's gravitational pull.
Yeah.
Now, once you're out of that, your acceleration goes up exponentially because you no longer have the pull of gravity. And whenever you add to that, it goes up even more exponentially. And, you know, there is another article from NASA right there about the water that's recently been found on the moon and surface water. Not even like the water on Mars where it's like, hey, here it is under the Grand Canyon equivalent. Surface water. And here lately, you had China's Yulu satellite going to check out the, quote, mystery hut on the moon, the large, just square obelisk off in the distance. There's the image, obelisk, folks. One of the many lunar anomalies. But hey, don't worry. You know, good guy. I hope they don't find like a bunch of monkey skeletons up around that thing. You know, like 2001 status.
Or, you know, we're constantly mistaking. One of the things I like to point out is we've learned how to buy a brick, as in brick for your fireplace, that they've created bacteria that can grow brick into any shape you want. Well, there's examples of honeycomb stone all over the earth. And so if you could create a self-sustaining, sun-driven, solid-state, flash-drived satellite, it might look like an asteroid or a meteor. And so our idea of a satellite or clunky metal technology versus a solid-state, propulsioned, anti-gravity, what looks like a space rock, the reality is that, making bricks out of fast-growing mushrooms. So there you go. But the I do think we're dealing with this ancient advanced human race having gone out to the moon, possibly, you know, the Black Knight satellite, or Eric Von Daniken. I got the privilege of speaking with him a few times, and he suggests that there is evidence from, again, sources that don't want to miss their families, that there's at least 6 or 8 other satellites in orbit that are not following the course of standard our technology satellites. They're a couple hundred miles. They're past our orbiting satellites. They're much older. They're over 18,000 years old, and that they're in the Earth orbit. And how many of those, of course, are being tracked or already very well established and aware of and classified for NASA? We don't get to know. It's frustrating.
No, and that's just it. There is not, I've got actually Gateway to Astronomy Astronaut Photography of Earth, and there is one of the famous images of the Black Knight right there.
It's a space blanket. It's not real. Don't look at that.
And you know, it's just that's one of those that there's an ongoing hypothesis about it, but there are numerous things out there, even like Oumuamua, that recently passed through the solar system. There are numerous people, like MIT level people, Harvard level people, that were swearing it was an interstellar satellite, that it was an interstellar probe sent to Earth. Its trajectory was too odd. The way it came in and out of orbit was too strange. Everything. And to think that once again, much like our good guest Stephen Myers points out, to think that our ancient relatives did not or could not have this technology or knowledge is the purest form of haughtiness.
It is, because that technology on the ground indicates it ancillary technologies that would be as advanced. So if you're cutting up giant 1,200-ton stones and matching them to earthquake technology and frequency and energy work, and you're doing genetic manipulation, you're doing planetary terraforming, you're using crystal silicrete technologies, you sure the hell are building satellites, and you're doing a lot of other work that is probably, in the world of weapons, terrifying. And if you're living tens of thousands of years or not dying indefinitely and managing carbon emissions planetary for a population that was probably much larger than where we are now. Here's the scary thing. We're so primitive when we think of satellites. They've done two things. So we assume ancient people would have done two things. They would have made a satellite that floats around the Earth because we need television. And two, they would send out satellites like Voyager that would eventually run into stuff that would be recovered by William Shatner in Star Trek. But for that sarcasm, think about it, folks. If you're a society that lives through multiple cataclysms, and even with all your advanced technology, what if you've already learned, as we are starting to, that impacting a floating or an asteroid in space takes many, many millions of miles to correct its course? What if you had a very ancillary, weird orbit of like an object that passes by our planet in a very strange trajectory, as was just described by our host, that was in an orbit that was always orbiting 4,000 years or 8,000 years or 13,000 years? What if the orbit of that probe wasn't alien, but was the early warning system to avoid planet-killing, 65-million-year-old, dinosaur-destroying, Greenland 19-mile diameter impacting off the southern coast of India? You want to see a terrifying impact we had? Yeah. Look at the crater off the south coast of India. But if you had a society that lived through shit like that or didn't want to get hit again, wouldn't it behoove you to have satellites that orbited our planet, but in such a wide elliptical that it maybe even traveled to beyond the edge of the solar system, and that, in quotes, comet, or that every 75-year, you know, that they're not just random hail-bop comets that are actually part of an early advanced warning system and Hubble telescope of 100,000 years ago that was snapping photos, sending radio. That's the other thing, folks. A lot of these instruments that were taking photographs of the far-reaching universe, the radio telescopes do not take pictures. They take radio signals. And so when you see a picture, it's an artistic interpretation. It's really just radio signals bumping into things.
Yeah.
So this thing that skimmed the Earth was probably, if it was an intentional elliptical advanced ancient satellite, it's never said, well, maybe it was communicating with what would have been a receiving signal point. Could it have been obelisks? Would it have been a pyramid? Would it have been buildings and constructions that were made out of other building materials that, of course, have turned to dust or been destroyed and forgotten and lost before the Younger Dryas, after the Younger Dryas, readapted and sharpened into pointy sticks by our dynastic relatives? But the reality is, if I was an advanced ancient society that didn't want to get slapped, godsmacked by another 19-mile-wide, terrifying, kiloton impact, I would want satellites traveling our solar system in various orbits, returning for potential repairs, expanding and extending so that we have a heads up so that we are not impacted again, so that they could send out weapons and ships to change the course of planetary destroying our but we don't think like that.
Well, but the thing is, we do think like that. We think like that currently right now. We have UN teams working on that. We have NASA teams working on that. We have whole concepts of, like, let's deflect an incoming asteroid or celestial body with a satellite. Now, what you have to remember is that, heck yeah, ancient cultures thought about that. When you're talking about comets, which are recurring signals of doom in the sky, when you're talking about meteor showers, which are recurring signals of doom in the sky, and anger of the gods coming at you, they had whole cults, and even the kings of countries went to the high priests and the astronomers for advice. Like, they devoted entire parts of their culture to the study of astronomy and these celestial objects and these things that came in and out of known observation. They're not momos of anybody. They had a bigger idea of it than us because they didn't have light pollution. Like, you can hear about the Geminid meteor showers that happen every year. Every year. Good luck seeing them if you live in 60% of the United States, which is the inhabited part of it.
Yeah.
You will not see them, despite the fact that there are bolides and straight up things the size of Volkswagens that you can see with smoke trails behind them. You won't see them against the city lights.
Oh yeah. This is just a good example of when we look at art, like right now, there's so many trends in the last few years over archaeoacoustics, archaeogenetics is now a big one.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that's going to be a real killer, the reason NASA, and I think there's a lot of things coming to the head with what I don't want to be the think tank that's going through the scenarios of, I mean, there are people out there killing each other in the name of their belief systems. What are you going to do when you reveal on, what are you going to do when you reveal on one day, not only is there myopic biologies on the other planets, but when you find skeletons, when you reveal that there are ancient humans living here, if you were to do one of those things, but if it all comes out at the same time, and then on top of it, now we have, unfortunately, no going around it, we have nanoarchaeology.
Yeah.
And they've done sedimentary nuclear DNA on not only like in the Denisovan cave. To give one example, they found using, again, these are just molecules, just bits, dust. They found 157 species of animals, plants, flora, fauna, and Denisovan out of dust. So you are not going to be able to avoid, if you don't no longer, the narrative for our history is a joke. It's way beyond broken. And the colleges that be and the people who are like, I literally had a dialogue with a friend who has a friend who's been an instructor, a teacher, a professor for 40 years. And the dialogue was, well, this, what you're teaching isn't true anymore. And the teacher and the professor says, I absolutely, yes, it is not. But listen to this hubris, this and this ignorance. But I don't want to not teach it because it means that for 40 years I've been wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was their answer.
Yeah.
That, how much more dangerous to truth, knowledge, and the search and rescue of what could be some cancer curing technology from our advanced ancient past than that attitude?
You could not spit more in the face of literal science than to say that. One of the big statements we make on this show all the time is science is not static. By definition, it's not static. If it was static, guess what? By all science in the 1500s, the Earth was flat, yo.
Oh, for the flat earthers are right. Will solve
and,
everything.
And unless and my whole hypothesis with that is time zones. That's why they exist. If people aren't up and walking, then the Earth doesn't rotate, right?
Right. Right.
Without time zones, we might all go to sleep at the same time, and you know, illusion dissolved.
Right.
But there's so much new data out there. Like, I was popping up some stuff on screen a while ago about new studies that are using nits from lice on mummies to help track the migration patterns of people and to help actively find genetic lines using lice.
Yep. And they're the indication, but to blow everyone's mind, nuclear sedimentary testing includes flora and fauna off the seafloor. And salt water is so damaging, yet they were able to plug out some sand under collapsed Dogger land, which hasn't been above ground in over 6,000 years. But again, very contemporary post Göbekli Tepe, but back to 18,000 years. Massive area from Scotland to France that was above water, and they're pulling up sedimentary remains under, despite ocean currents and thousands of years underwater. They have pulled up, and in the granular sands of salt-watered seabeds of the Baltic and of the English Channel, they're telling us the flora and fauna of Doggerland from 8,000 plus years ago. So yeah. The idea of academic hubris hiding in what they haven't wanted to address. Listen, we have whole Paracas skulls. One of the preferences in my book is to talk about the Paracas of Peru. But there are naturally born elongated skulled humans all around the planet. And there's not one multi-billion dollar Yale, Oxford, fill in the blank. There's not a single big time Ivy League, whatever, pick a big school, don't care. None of them have done the genetic testing, had the balls to do the genetic testing, and it has nothing to do with it. It's a cowardice to test the Paracas. They don't even need the DNA. I mean, they don't even need the sedimentary rudimentary objects, but how are you going to continue to hide thousands of bits of information that are going to show ultimately Denisovan, Neanderthal humans all living side by side, elongated skulled humans, a number of other species we've never even heard of because we have a fractional
element. Dragon Man.
That guy.
The new Dragon Man that was just found and it was just a myth. It was just a story. It wasn't even like a local story. This dude like found a skull and threw it in a well and told his kid on his deathbed, like, oh yeah, by the way, there's this creepy skull that I found. It's out in the well. You may want to check that out. And then he died. And sure enough, there's like a whole new race of humans found that are like 9 feet tall. With head volumes twice the size of normal humans.
Right. And so there's enough out there, including these elongated skulled people, that if any one of these schools were about truth and actually figuring things out, they would just go after the facts and continue to evolve. I had no idea that the game of popularity was worse in science than even in high school.
Oh, it's horrifying, man. It's horrifying. You could not get more religious than what science is now, literally.
And I believe that the people listening, the people enjoying these shows, that there is active genetic memory going on in all of us, that we have thousands of years of either our own or embedded memories from not just relatives, but from, I think, the collective human consciousness. I do think that there's a reason people listening to these shows, that we are actively a part of or at least knitting the Afghan back together of to what all of it means. I do think that I'm out there doing field work, but I do think everyone listening participates in a way that adds to that collective consciousness. And I wish we could sit here. I want everyone out there to know that although we're throwing it out there because I think it's already in the back of our head because we're doing this, is that by saying this, it's helping crack the thinly veiled shell of academic hubris. But at the same time, for those of you who have had your own hunches and going out there to seek the truth, this isn't because I think those institutions or you think these institutions are going to come around for us. They'll do research that won't get them in trouble. Yeah. But I need them. I need it on the table so that when they find a whole bunch of genetic and tissue and sedimentary DNA data, that they don't throw it out because it's anomalous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like precisely.
Yeah. And it's one of those that even talking to people like Craig Woolheater about Bigfoot, things like that, other cryptids, literally nothing aside from a body.
Yeah,
will convince modern science. Nothing.
Well, and not unfortunately,
generations of anecdotal stories that match from numerous cultures, not other anomalous samples, anything else. Nothing short of a corpse will suffice.
And that's what,
for modern science.
And unfortunately, that's what. Well, between quantum engineering, getting into quantum computing and nuclear DNA testing, they're not going to be able to avoid it. When they can go in and lift all the flora, fauna, and species of an individual, mind you, not just species, an individual animal dies and turns to dust. And in that dust, they're able to say there was a coyote in here, there was a parrot in here, there was a, you know, whatever. They can literally break it all down to insects. And they're screwed now. So the bodies turning to dust don't matter. The level of every society form of imagine going into to a city that was buried in the sands of Egypt, and that city was built out of the remnants of a pyramid, and being able to reconstruct not only the city and the way it was stacked, but from those pieces, you could say, well, there was like 100 million pieces of this pyramid that they used to build this wall for this city 4,000 years ago. But that wall, when we put those pieces back together based on the pieces we found in the dust, those pieces correspond with the side of these polygonal walls, which appear to fit on the Red Steppe Pyramid, which would have been from 46,000 years ago. Yeah. And that's where we're headed, folks. That's happening.
Yeah. It gets just that detailed. I mean, simply go watch an episode of Oak Island, folks, and see what they can do with laser ablation, you know, just literally hitting something with an ultraviolet laser and detecting the particles that come off. They can not only tell what percentage of lead something is, they can tell what year range it was mined in. And because of the other elements with it, they can tell specifically what range of the world it comes in, like down to the mine.
Really,
like, it came from this mine in this city.
Yeah, we're really close to where it's not avoidable. You can't hide it.
Yeah.
I hate to think that
the lie will be harder to sustain than the truth soon enough. And well, you know what? Just saying it in that right gives me another big reason why they brought in members of the Catholic Church.
That's what I was about to ask you.
Like, it's a horrible truth. But think about it in that right, folks. Eventually, the lie will be worse to sustain than the truth, than just owning up to the truth, admitting it, and moving forward from there.
Do you think it will be a truth, or do you think it'll be another half truth with shitload of lies?
I think that there's going to have to be at least a half truth, at a minimum a half truth. I wouldn't say that they aren't going to try to sustain other lies, and yes, every bone inside of me that was ever a youth minister and every bone inside of me that's a father to that kid in the room next door to me says, yeah, if you're withholding truth, that's technically a lie. Every bone in me. So if you're willing to admit that, You know, I mean, that's a big part of my separation with my faith is the conversations I've had with spiritual directors of mine and things like that, that were like, seriously, dude, you ask me to accept a lot of spectral evidence every single Sunday as a point of faith, but you're going to literally tell me that there is zero doctrine on ghosts or the paranormal. Zero. Zero.
Yeah,
you're
going to
tell me that there's exorcists and demons literally stalking my soul.
Right.
And that I need to accept this truth over here. But this one, which the other one kind of can't exist without. Nah, dude. Nah. We can't talk about that. And that's not acceptable.
There are so many things that we could do a whole other episode about
and
what
that's
doesn't
why
add
it's
up.
Like,
about.
You know, at some point that that loop of logic collapses for me.
There is a significant,
and I think that's what's going to happen for a lot of people when this stuff starts coming out. And I think that that's exactly why they brought people from the church in, is because a lot of people, period, whether you're talking religious, political, whatnot, Jared, they're going to have a crisis of faith and a crisis of conscience, my man. They're going to have a paradigm shift that they do not know what to do or how to deal with. And unless you've had that spiritual crisis in life that makes you question literally who you are down to the core and fiber of who you are, you're not going to know how to deal with this when it happens.
Yeah, no.
And that's hard, man. That's a hard truth to even just fathom right now, that we're on the cusp of. We're on the cusp of that.
Yeah, there is a number of things where there are a number of people that don't want to change from their, they have their lives figured out in a way that doesn't, they don't want a spiritual conflict. They don't want any kind of a theological or emotional conflict with what they've experienced either personally or even as a family tradition.
Even what they experienced from last Tuesday, man, can we have some regularity? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
darts are Thursdays, pool clubs on, we play pool on Fridays.
Yeah, like we can't even figure out whether or not it's safe to go to a Knights of Columbus meeting, Jack, much less whether or not you can go to Christmas with the family. So what is the normal? What is the reality? What is the truth? You know, and as we say on this show so many times, that truth is a filter. Truth is filtered from your reality and from your experience. That's why two people that grew up in the exact same house, 1 year apart with the exact same parents, can have two totally different stories.
Yeah, yep.
Because their experience and their filter of that is 180 degrees separate, 180 degrees different, because they're different people. They process things. They filter things differently. They think about things differently. So I don't think that there is a universal answer, but I think that there is a capital T truth out there. And I think it's going to be really a really, really rich, thick pill for a lot of people to swallow, Jared. That's all I can say.
A rich, thick pill.
Like if you've ever taking like a fish oil pill and had it bust in your mouth, it's gonna be like that, folks. <It's, laughs> you're gonna be dealing with it for a minute or two, all right? It's you know, and it's not gonna be a great sensation or flavor or experience amongst any of it. So I think we are getting ready for a huge paradigm shift. Huge paradigm shift right now. And that's what that announcement, I think, really kind of drives home. I think it was kind of, as so many things in the world of soft disclosure are, Jared, just kind of announced with no fanfare.
Well, it would be funny if it's like all of us have to be prepared to know what's wrong. I mean, to know that we start with a theory It's not about being right. It's just, look, here's the facts. Here's what we can conclude from the facts we have or suspect. But then, okay, well, let's keep digging and keep digging. And then, oh, well, this was wrong, but this was right. Or this wasn't, and none of it was right, but it put us in this one direction. I mean, that's where we should be excited, including these old institutions. You know, they should be excited to pull out old finds, re-examine the nuclear sedimentary and DNA testing to go after what are likely answers that are way beyond what they thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not have said that better. Jared, thank you so much for your time. Tonight and always, man, even in our private conversations, it's never not deep. It's never not explorative, no matter what we're talking about together. And tonight was very, very much the same. Thank you so much for everything, thanks. Always.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for everyone for listening. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, you know, check me out at notaliens.com, or, you know, if you can support me there and sign up, great. Otherwise, just go to my YouTube channel and subscribe on YouTube at Not Aliens.
Yeah, absolutely. Stop on by, check that stuff out, folks. Make sure to stop on by and join his stuff. You get some great announcements from him. Make sure to stop on by and check out his new documentary over there, Terra Core, Our Ancient Past Revealed. Just the few minutes that we watched at the beginning and the later parts going into nanotechnology, things like that. Absolutely phenomenal information. Jared, please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from notaliens.com, make sure to stop on by Facebook, other social media, join Curious Realm. Just Google Curious Realm. That's all you have to do. Look, I'll show you right now just how easy it is. Curious Realm. And you can see we are pretty much the entire front page of Google. Yeah, look at that. Everywhere you want to be, folks. Stop on by, check it out. Curious Realm is the name. CuriousRealm.com is the website. CuriousRealm.com/store is the store. /.support is the support page. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.